Blog Talk Radio.
Proudly presents another episode of Airline Talk, News and History. Wow, we've got a lineup for you today that even Johnny Carson would be proud of. We've got great guests, history and memories by former employees of the airlines that are included in our broadcast. My name is Neil Holland. I'm a retired captain of Eastern Airlines and producer of the show. And if you're listening in on the show's website, www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie, and would like to call in and talk with our guest and host, or to add your comments, you can dial 213-816-1611. The producers will see your number, the producer, me, will see your number on the caller's board and open your microphone, which is your telephone, to bring you into the conversation. Now, let me repeat the number again. It's area code 213-816-1611. And we are a satellite-based radio show. It's carried around the world, believe it or not. And over 50 countries listen in regularly. And for the first time this past week, we had South Africa tuning us in. We've been doing this for over 11 years now, and if you would like to listen to any of our previous shows, nearly 700 now, you can go to the web address I just gave you. That, again, is blogtalkradio.com/CAPTEDDIE, and choose any show. from this show to back 11 years ago when it all began. Right, Margaret? Well, Margaret might not be there. Okay, now, Captain Jim Holder, we're going to introduce our guest here. And first of all, I'm going to see if I can retrieve Margaret here somehow or another. I don't think she's... That's a reason she hasn't... now your microphone is not muted. Margaret, say hello.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Captain Neil.
And answer my question if you can remember it. Which,
oh,
that's
all the
right.
700 episodes?
Yeah.
I can definitely remember. We had a lot of fun at the early days, and we still have fun now, thanks to all the wonderful co-hosts that you have on the show. But I definitely remember all those funny, funny skits we used to do.
And it sure, technically, it sure hasn't improved very much over the years.
Oh, well.
Okay. Now I'm going to talk to our host. We got Jim Holder in Atlanta. I'm going to open some phones. I think I've got you muted, Jim Holder, and start opening microphones here. I've got a board full, and we'll get into our show. Hello, Jim.
Hello from the Atlanta area, Jim Holder.
Okay. And then we'll go up to Toronto. Let's see if I got Brenda's microphone. Brenda Chabot. Hello, Brenda.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
I hope it's not snowing there now.
It is sunny and bright and hot and humid.
Okay. Are you in Florida? Are you sure you're in Canada?
Oh, no, I'm here.
Okay.
Canada.
Well, let's go on and see who else is with us here. We've got, a whole board. You're with Ward Air. I want to mention the airline that you were with formerly, Ward Air is no longer in business, but you flew the beautiful 747s and other aircraft with Ward Air up in Canada.
Yeah, DC-10s. Yeah, we just had 4 747s and 3 DC-10s.
Okay,
and it was all international. It was a wonderful time.
And, of course, Toronto was one of my favorite Canadian layover cities. Okay, now let's move to Texas. Let's say hello to Jim Harris. Jim, is your microphone open?
Hello, greetings from Dripping Springs, Texas.
Dripping Springs.
I'm out here enjoying the, I'm out here enjoying the decent weather. It was 115 on my patio yesterday in the shade.
Oh, my God.
Yep. Anyway, I like summer, but this is, I've enjoyed about all of it I can stand.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Now, let's see. Over in Pensacola area, Pace, Florida. Golly, I used to live in Santa Rosa County. Hello, Margaret. Margaret Bars.
Hey. Hey again. And just want to let you know, I do have Luann here, so she'll be joining us in just a moment or two.
Well, she can say hello, can't she?
Just a minute. Let me open the door. I locked her out. Okay.
Locked her out.
Hey, Captain Neil and co-host. Margaret locks me out all the time. I don't know why. I mean, I think I add a little something to the show, for gosh sakes. Anyway, hello, everybody.
Hello.
Okay. And let's see, we Jose, are you with us? Nope, he's not. Well, okay, let's see who else I see. Leanne Rutledge. Now, Leanne is new with us for the first time, and we'll tell you a little bit more, and she can tell you a little bit more about it later in the show. Hello, Leanne, excuse me. Leanne?
Hey, how are you?
We're doing fine. Where are you?
In Winston-Salem, North Carolina.
All right. Good old Carol. That's my home state, by the way. I think I told
you.
That's
the best.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Florida's not bad right now, but at any rate. And I see others on my producer's board, and I want to say I hope, Ron, are you with us in area code? No? Yeah, 305.
Yes.
R- Ron Infantino.
Yes, Captain Neil. Yes, I am. Thank you.
Oh, good, good, good. And I've got a caller from area code 908. Hello, area code 908. Would you like to say hello?
Hello. This is Sharon Moore in Somerset, New Jersey.
Wow. Okay, Sharon. Good to see your name on the board and good you're with us. Thank you.
Hi, Sharon.
I'm happy to be. Hi.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's move on into the show here. Anybody have anything to say?
Hey, Captain Neil, can I just jump in here? It's Luann again. I just wanted you to know that Margaret has some interesting questions for the host and the listeners that she'd like to ask. But you know, she's such a scaredy cat, she was afraid to ask you on her own if she could have permission to stump the host. She had some emails from several folks wanting to know the answers. Now, you know I could do this myself, but I have to admit, she does have a better way of speaking English. That's enough, Luann. Let Captain Neil do the show.
Well, I think this is as good a way to start the show as any. So, Margaret, what do you have for us?
Well, okay. I did receive some questions from some of our listeners by email, and I promise these will be short. So, co-host, get ready to answer. Now, the first question we have is from a Mike Jones, and Mike asks, what does the propeller do on a plane? Does anyone know?
It pulls it along quite nicely. Like a propeller pushes it.
It spins.
Spins fast, you go fast.
Yes. Those are all correct, but Mike's answer was it keeps the pilot cool. If you think I'm wrong, stop it and watch him sweat.
Golly.
Now, we had another email. I love these. They came in. So Judy Noble asked, how often do planes crash?
Just once.
Just once.
Oh, you got it. Very good. So that's one for our co-host and one for the callers who called in with his question. Cheryl Campbell asks, what's the difference between an optimist and a pessimist as it relates to airplanes?
An optimist hopes it takes off, and a pessimist is considering the fact that it might not.
That's close.
Her answer was, an optimist designed the airplane, and a pessimist put in the seatbelt. I thought that one was cute.
What, is there another one?
Oh, there's two more, sorry. Anyway, Wayne Fugit wants to know, and now this might be a tricky one, and I laugh every time I read this one, so I'm going to try not to, but who invented the first airplane that could not fly?
Howard Hughes.
Howard Hughes.
No.
That was good, yeah. Well, his answer, rather, for this one was the wrong brothers, not the right brothers.
The wrong brothers.
Okay.
Do I get paid for doing these, Captain Neil? Really?
Oh, yeah. Okay. You'll get a bonus.
Okay, thank you. Just wanted to know. And last but not least, from a Mr. Charles Hayes, what do you get if you cross a snake and a plane?
That's a tough one.
It is. I'll just go ahead and shortcut that one for you. A Boeing constrictor.
Okay.
Boeing constrictor.
Yeah.
You're going to have to
think about that.
Explain that to me after the show, okay?
Well, Margaret, since you got to joke around, I want to tell our listeners that we've had so much rain here in the Florida Panhandle that when I was having lunch with one of my married girlfriends yesterday, she said it's been raining so much in the last few days, and my poor husband seems so depressed about it. He just stands by the window staring. And she said, I'm telling you, if it continues raining, I'm going to have to let that poor man come in. You can laugh at my joke because I thought I was doing just as good as Margaret. But anyway, take it away, Neil.
Well, I didn't even need a laugh clip, sound clip there. So thank you a lot, Margaret, for those questions. And, yeah, that explains a lot in aviation for sure. Thanks, ladies. We needed that humor to put a smile on our faces, and I can see you're all smiling now all the way through the cyber lines up to space and back down to your house. Does anyone have something to add to this show that might be a little bit more serious, please?
I have a couple of things I'd like to throw out for discussion, Neil. Now, that's at some point, not necessarily on this show, so as not to hog the airtime. But I'll just throw a few things out here. Do you think the new, very casual uniforms for cabin crew are appropriate? And what message does this casual send to passengers? The next thing is cabin crew training addressing the issue of resilience? Or more importantly, lack of resilience during or after emergency events. The next one is, how can cabin crew training departments offset the me-first attitude in new trainees that come from that me-first generation? Meaning that if the plane's on fire, they can stand at that door and say, I'm getting paid such crap for this, I'm jumping out first. I think cabin crew training has any effect on a safe and uneventful flight. So these are just thoughts on future safety in the cabin, and I hope others feel that these are worth discussing. Back to the uniforms. You know, they just, I looked it up, just, you know, uniform psychology, and it basically says, you know, uniforms ensure that all persons in any given workspace are identifiable as employees and not customers or outsiders. This is especially important in areas of public safety. And the last one is uniform is a situational variable affecting obedience. This is because authority figures often wear clothes that symbolize their position of authority. And now we've got several airlines coming out with them wearing golf shirts, gym jackets that you'd wear to a gym, shorts, running shoes. And I just worry in a situation, they're just going to look, a passenger could be wearing exactly the same thing. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I've got one. I think, first of all, it's better than, I'm glad they're not dressing them up as firemen.
The main uniform is they came up with when U.S. Airways acquired American. More than half of the flight attendants were allergic to the material because it had formaldehyde in it. So they continued to use their American and their U.S. Air uniforms, and they have not solved that problem yet.
But didn't Southwest Airlines, Brenda, weren't they really the first ones to go casual?
There's been a few small ones, yes. Well, that's not a huge airline, I guess, but yes, that's decided to do that. We had one new airline up and coming in Canada that didn't really make it. Anyway, they decided, have you guys heard of Tilly and Durables? The Tilly hats, you know, the one that the elephant can eat and then poop out and it's still good? Anyway, they went with Tilly outfits.
And then they had to put it on their head?
I know. But anyway, yes. So it's just, not only that, but how can a flight attendant feel proud? You feel proud in your uniform, and you're recognizable. And this whole, why do policemen wear uniforms? You know, do you want them, like, look what happened with the nursing profession when they went to wearing scrubs. They look like it could be a janitor. They all wear the same. The kitchen staff, janitors, doctors, nurses, and it lowers risk for the physician.
Well, you know, Brenda,
so that, obviously I have a lot of thoughts.
Well, it brings to my mind that usually when the flight finishes and you go to that layover hotel, layover in the layover city, it would be strange to see the pilots in uniform walking down the terminal with blue jeans, the flight attendants with blue jeans and cowboy outfits and what have you. And, I hadn't even thought about that until you were talking about it. I would be embarrassed.
Well, we look at all the, disrespect, the lack of following rules on airplanes. Well, come on. This is just feeding into it.
Yeah.
Can I say something?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead, Leanne.
Well, I flew for Eastern for 22 years, and we did wear lacrosse dresses at one point, the dresses for summer in different shades of tail.
Yeah.
And
that was lovely.
They were comfortable, And
This is Sharon.
And then when I went back to nursing, many times we would wear scrubs, but after we got to the hospital, because of germs, we didn't want to bring them into the hospital with street clothes or uniforms from home, because some people are more sanitary than others. So, and then we tried, I remember, too, speaking about the uniforms, and the different departments would wear different color scrubs. That's how we knew them apart.
Yeah.
Right. That would help, But as far as flying, seeing your cabin crew in running shoes, and that's what these are, running shoes and shorts. And like I say, the golf T-shirts with the three buttons down the front for women and men. It's just, it's awful. It takes away the whole, respect.
In the 60s and 70s, we wore those hot pants. I only wore them once because they were a little too much.
A little bit too hot.
Okay.
Nice looking.
That's not good.
Well, I see Jim Holder's hand raised over there. What you got, Jim?
Oh, you got any Anderson Airline commercials? I'm having trouble keeping up with these panties.
Yeah, here's one for you.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Airport Baggage Handler.
Mr. Airport Baggage Handler.
Why just set a bag down when you can throw it, kick it, or simply ignore it?
Time for my lunch break.
SFO, ORD, LAX, the complex airport codes are almost unsolvable. But that's okay, because thanks to you, everything's going to Tulsa.
That's in Oklahoma.
When comforting a traveler about a lost bag or a treasured family pet, you need only remember three simple words. Airline not responsible.
Thank you, I'm dying.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh king of the carousel. You give us all a reason to carry on.
Mr. Airport Baggage Handler.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
That is the best.
Oh, golly.
That's perfect. Leanne, I was wondering if I could say something.
Yeah, Leanne.
I never could figure out why they would put flight attendants in a white shirt. And I had 2 foot surgeries from wearing high heels that were 2 inches high. So I do understand a more casual approach to flying. And I think that a white shirt and a tough scarf that's too tight, or working all day in high heels, is just not very practical.
Yeah.
We never had shoes. We had what was called galley shoes. And for boarding, we had to wear our high heels. But the minute we boarded the passengers, we went and we took them off and put on our galley shoes, which were like a low-heeled, very low-heeled pump and very comfortable. So you still looked professional.
Yeah,
not running shoes.
We weren't allowed to do that when I was flying. You had to keep your heels on. And like I said,
that was
in 1978.
We might have to do a complete show on airline apparel. So we've got to move on. We got some other things to talk about. And Margaret, I think you have something for us.
I do, Captain Neil. You know, earlier you sent out to all the hosts asking for topics for discussion or for future shows. So I'd like to read some of them to see if there are any that we could talk about on today's show, as we've already started. Now for the host, if you would select one of these I'm about to read, perhaps we can briefly discuss your question. And this is a long list. Number one, do you agree with the technologies that will replace pilots in the future? Why? Why not? Do you believe four-engine airplanes will still be flying in the future? Do you believe pilots will be replaced by computers in the future? Do you think there will be one pilot in the cockpit in the near future? Why? Why not? How do you see the displays in the cockpit in the next 10 years? How do you think airspace will be managed in 20 years? How do you think cockpits will change in the next 20 years? How do you think commercial airliners will change as to cabin passenger service? How will a pilot's job change in the future? How will air traffic control change over the next years? How will future aircraft be? How will future cockpits be? How will the cabin interiors change in future aircraft design? In your opinion, how will airspace be in the next 20 years? What are the biggest challenges the aviation industry will have to face from now on? Will robotics replace the role of flight attendant service? What are your plans in aviation for the next 10 years? What changes do you think aircraft will undergo in the future? What do you think about phraseology and communication in the next 10 years? What do you think about the aviation industry developments for the next 10 years? What do you think about the job opportunities for flight attendants in the future? What do you think will happen in relation to job opportunities for pilots, flight attendants, mechanics, reservations? What should companies do to improve their pilots' training? What technological changes do you think the aviation industry will see in the next 10 years? What will aviation be like in 10 years, in your opinion? When will be your next flight? When will we fly electrical airplanes? Will manufacturers keep producing narrow-body airplanes? And last but not least, will the computers help or not in the next 5 to 10 years in the cockpit? Okay, so let's see who wants to start with his or her selection.
I'll start with number 16. Will robotics replace the role of flight attendant service? No.
Yes.
The airlines are not going to pay for a robot, as we have in restaurants now, going up and down serving the aisles, because the flight attendant role is to help passengers evacuate, to help with medical emergencies, to put fires out, and many other things. So they're going to need them in the cabin anyway. So they're not going to have them sitting in their jump seat for the whole flight when something might not go wrong. So no, I don't think robots will replace flight attendants. That's mine.
Okay. Neil, I'll let you take it from there. You can call out the co-host individually.
Okay. I hear a lot of ice being put in glasses. What are we drinking now? The gin time doesn't start. The martini time doesn't start till 5 o'clock. Somebody's getting a head start here. So, you know, in kitchen table radio, or either as I'm about to call this, chicken soup radio, we can't filter out sounds in the background. So if you are inclined to eat potato chips or either drink ice cubes, beverages with ice cubes, put your phone on mute. That would be great. But I'm trying to weed it out, and sometimes I click the wrong button. But I'm going to open up a few of these microphones, and so that's just a suggestion. So we all don't get thirsty or hungry at the same time. Let's see. How about Jim Harris? Do you have one that you've chosen, or just want to pass?
Well,
I'm still thinking about the uniform thing, flight attendant uniforms. And I got hired in 1966. And at the time, the flight attendants had these great-looking uniforms, a summer uniform. It was a nice, authoritative-type uniform. Everybody knew who you were, and the same thing with the winter uniforms.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I was impressed with that, and I think that's this casual approach I don't like.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wouldn't.
Yeah, Jim.
That's like myself. I would never show up wearing blue jeans to fly the airplane.
Yep.
I think the uniforms that we had, they looked great, and they were authoritative, and I was always proud to put the uniform on.
And, you know, Jim, some of the greatest designers in New York design these uniforms for our flight cabin crew members, and
yeah.
And I'm sure they did with the other airlines, like Ward Airline and all the other carriers.
Yeah, Alitalia, Air France,
yeah.
You remember the funny-looking uniforms that Braniff had when he had all the colors?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we talked about that a few weeks ago. Okay.
Okay.
Now, let's see. Jim Holder, do you have a favorite?
Yes, I do. I will tell you, though, first, I'm usually a guilty one with ice cubes and potato chips but and popsicles, but it wasn't me today. Not today. I'm pure as a driven snow. I'm going to go up and take number 27. When will we fly electrical airplanes? Well, that's an easy one to answer. Never.
That's right,
they
never.
They have batteries in them. Batteries, they, you know, you may find some little something or other to fly around the airport about 30 minutes and land, and that couldn't even hold a co-pilot. It had to be one pilot. And extension cords, that idea ain't even going to get off the ground, you know, for that, but extension cords. And if they do have rechargers out there on the wings, you know, like people are putting on their houses now, what they going to do when they can't fly at night? All the airplanes would have to sit and wait for the sun to come up. And if the sun does come up, you got clouds, you got the same damn problem again. It ain't going to happen, Coach. Don't put me in.
Hey,
and
listen.
The power grid is so weak now.
Yeah. Okay. Now this is open to everyone. So Sharon and Leanne and Beverly and Ron, just you know, chime in if you have one of the favorites, if you can remember all of those that we asked. But yeah, this is good. I like this.
I told Neil over the phone the other day that we were taxiing out one day on the 7th on a YS-11, which was a twin-prop Japanese airplane. And there was a lady standing up holding on to the what would be the overhead bin space. Now, we're taxiing on an active taxiway. She's standing up, and I said, "Ma'am, you need to sit down." And she said, "I always stand up on the subway."
She was probably reading a newspaper too.
Probably was.
That's a good one.
Someone else was there with you, Leanne. Who else just has?
No one. I had lunch yesterday with Kim Badinger. Her father was the captain on 401 that went down the Everglades. Captain Walton. And
Beverly, I don't know if you know that, Beverly. Leanne mm-hmm. told me earlier that she thought that she had flown with Kim Loft, Bob
uh-huh.
Loft's father, and it turned out that she had. So you had lunch with her the other day.
I did. I had lunch with her yesterday, and I think she'd be somebody very interesting to have on the show one day.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, well, that would be, yeah.
Give that some thought.
I would have flown with him the next day.
You would have, okay.
I would have flown with him the next day if he had survived. I flew with him many times, and he
now,
really
is this Beverly?
Yep, this is Beverly. I mean,
okay.
I had to check, you know, we had to check the underneath the seat for the life vest and all that. So, I mean, I would have flown with him the next day if he survived.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, please let her know. He was great.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other comments before we move on?
Well, can I say something?
Sure.
Sharon?
Sharon, all right.
I used to fly 26-401 all the time because a lot of the girls, flight attendants that flew it, had children and they wanted to do a turnaround. We did three on, three off. And I remember I used to take turns with, I forget her name, but we used to take turns working in the galley on that L-1011. And we used to change into jeans because we had to crawl over those carts.
Yeah,
so,
that makes sense.
Yeah, we would change when we were down there in the galley. And then when we wanted to come up to first class or whatever, we wore our apron so they wouldn't know who we were or what we were.
The Piedmont airplanes were so hot we used to take our shirts completely off and wear our serving smocks with our uniform.
Well, now I've got to tell my first funny thing that happened to me as a brand spanking new co-pilot back in 1963. We had a trip that left Washington, made about 100 stops down to Miami on a Convair 440, laid over. That's where I was living at the time, so I just went home. But the next morning, checking in at 6:30 in the morning, you parked outside. There was a fence separating the airport, the aircraft, the eastern side, and the cars were right on the other side of that fence. And you park your car and go into operations and get ready for your flight. Well, went in and met the captain. I went out, told the captain I was going to go out and pre-flight the airplane. Went out, and there had been a rain shower. I mean, a thunder bumper that had emptied the skies right in the parking lot and on that Convair 440 sitting there on the ramp. And when I walked up those stairs, here I see this flight attendant in a bra and a half slip. Now, I'm pausing there. I'm pausing there to get some kind of reaction. True story, guys. True story. A bra and a half slip. And I stopped midway on those stairs going up to the Convair. And I thought, my God, this is going to be a great career. Flight attendants dressed like this, you know. What had happened, and I'll never forget, she was the chairperson for the Flight Attendants Union down in Miami. I think it was Luella or something like that. I can't think of her name now. But when I came up, of course, she saw me looking at her, and I mean, boy, was I looking at her. And she said, there's a reason for this. And I said, well, I thought there might be. And she had taken off her uniform. And if you guys had ever flown the Convair, in the cockpit, just as you open it to go into the flight deck, there's a radio rack. And that radio rack was generated a lot of heat. And she had taken off her uniform, put it on hangers, and it was hanging on the rack beside the radio, drying out because she had been caught in that rainstorm. True story. All right.
Well, doesn't it have an ending?
No, that's the ending. That's the ending. She put, of course, before boarding, she did have a uniform. But that was the old blue one with the pillbox hat. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, man. Beautiful. It was beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, now, Jim Holder, let's move on here. Let's read some of the email that we got.
Well, anyhow, thank you, Neil. I'll be glad to do it. We received the following regarding future shows. John Mills II says a show about Nunskids, and his comment, World Airways, Trans-International Airways, Trans-America, Flying Tigers, all began as Nunskids, Seaboard World and International Airlines, Airlift International. Those are just a few of the ones that I can remember off the top of the head. It had a little help from the text here, though, of course. And I'm sure I left some out. That's what he would like to do. And what, anybody got any comments about doing it on this Nunskid?
Yeah. Yeah, we can consider that and put it in our schedule.
Yeah.
All right. How about that?
All right. Well, here's another guy. this guy's named Tom Riley. And he said, if you're looking for aviation related, but not Pan Am, how about the story of the world's first airline, the St. Petersburg Tampa Airport Line? Now, I thought some years ago, Neil, that we did have a show on that. Am I
wrong?
Yeah,
we did. We did do a show on that years ago. Yeah. Down in Tampa.
Thomas
yeah.
is out of luck then.
Yeah. All right. Next one.
Well, it's James D. Petria writes, I'm not a member, as I was never employed by Eastern Airlines, but I have a good friend that passed away this past January by the name of Captain Hank Finelli, and he flew out of New York. Maybe a mention of him in your dialogue would be very nice, and thank you, and I can tell you I knew Hank Finelli. I met him at Reba conventions. He was a super nice guy, a good, easy guy to talk to and know. And unfortunately, he did die about a year ago.
Yeah.
You know him, Neil?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did know.
Nice guy. All right.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Lisa Goldman Thompson writes, there is an interesting book I just finished about Jack and Helen Fry, F-R-Y, last name. It's called The Camelot Years of TWA. Also reading The Greatest Stewardess Rebellion right now about how women changed the work culture in the cabin. Rebellion. Fly Girl was released. And maybe that's some soot matter on these books. There's another guy named Harold Payne. He wants to talk about the way things go in the break room on the ramp. We've had ramp people on here before, I think, but maybe we do need to do a little bit more of them. And talk to the folks who work the ramp, on us retirees who work the ramp.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Somebody trying to shut me up.
Yeah. You talking about ramp service. Go ahead.
This is Leanne Watlick, and I was going to say you were talking about a ramp personnel. We took off out of Raleigh, headed for Dallas on a trip, and as soon as we took off on the 727, we heard a terrible banging in the rear of the airplane, and the captain called and said we were going back to Raleigh, but the ground was missing one of its agents. So we turned around and went back to Raleigh and taxied to the tarmac area, not to a gate area. And they opened the compartment, and the ramp rat was inside the bin and had been there for takeoff and landing. And as I told the passengers that we were going back to paperwork, because if we had told them that we were going back to return the employees to the ramp, they would have all gotten off.
With that, I got to do this.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Oh, boy.
No. Okay, Brenda.
Well, I hope I remember these.
Brenda, what do you have?
Oh, yeah. Okay. God, my turn already.
Yeah.
Just a minute. I got to find it, Neil. It skips by so quick on my computer.
Well, this
okay.
is about 401. Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Okay. So Barbara Rodriguez wrote, I shared this 401 episode on a private group for Eastern Airlines Boston and encourage others to share. I was flying only 6 months with EAL on that fateful evening. I encourage our EAL family to spread this around and about donations. It's very important. Sandy Pearl shared a post on Silverliners International, and she really nails it. This must be a priority for each chapter to give what they can. The memorial being completed, will give a sense of peace to everyone involved. It took 45 years to complete the memorial from Sandy's flight, Southern 242. 45 years. Only 22 survivors and 72. There was only 22 survivors with 72 packs or people killed. The number of survivors still living now is 8. The emotional scars are for a lifetime and must be honored and remembered to comfort always. Please donate whatever you can. God bless our industry, as it is safer because of what is learned after a crash. Thanking you all in advance. Yeah, thank you, Sandy. Carol Finzel, she wrote, going to try to send your post to ex-employees of Braniff International. Yodis Frankie, I had the flight attendant Beverly, hello Beverly, from Eastern Flight 401 on my flight from Miami to Newark when the memorial was first erected. She slipped and injured her ankle during the ceremony. I was so fortunate to have her on my flight, and we talked the entire time. And, Mr. Producer, did we get Beverly to connect with us today?
Oh, yes, we did. And hello, hello, Beverly Raposa. And also she brought her friend who was a passenger on that flight. So, Brenda, tell us about that and tell us about how we're doing as far as the donations for the memorial. It's all yours, Brenda, Beverly.
Okay. Hi, Captain Neil. Hi, Brenda.
Hello.
And
hi.
Thank you so much. yes, well, exciting news. We did receive the approval from the Miami Springs City Council, so we have the definite good to go. And, Captain Neil, thanks. I think you put out today, I sent you a picture, and I think you put it out on Facebook. We'll be putting it out on the other site of exactly where that memorial is going to sit on that grassy median. Just in front of actually the Miami Springs golf driving course, so to speak, which is Curtis Parkway, right where it splits right there. And I have to go down in probably 2 or 3 weeks to meet with the city manager and pick the exact spot that it's going on. But we are good to go. The memorial company now, the materials are being ordered. And as they begin to create the memorial, they are going to send us little video snippets so that we can post those so that people actually see, you know, their donations at work, the memorial actually being created. We are now on track for Thursday, December 29th. I think it's probably going to be around 1 p.m. that we'll be, that we will be dedicating. There's still, you know, some other things to work out. I've got some great volunteers and more needed, but we're working on that. And so we're doing well. So, you know, just a couple of things. This memorial, it is so important. And I agree with Sandy Pearl with that. It's so important to so many people, you know, who had loved ones on board 401 that perished. You know, some of them have waited so long to have a memorial raised with their loved ones' names on it. And I agree, too, that, you know, all of us on December 29th will have that peace that we haven't had. I have been in touch recently with two sisters that lost their cousin who was 7 months pregnant and her husband on that. She had a fundraiser several years ago and actually has held on to the money hoping that this memorial would become a reality. So she is going to go ahead and send in a check. And then just recently, a couple of days ago, from Peter Weingart, who has the original 401 site, he received and he sent me this. And he said, you may want to respond to this. And, you know, Brenda, when you're saying that and Sandy Pearl was talking about the impact, you know,
yes,
on survivors, and that's why we put on there of the 101 perished and the 75 survivors. But this came in, and I'm going to call her this afternoon. And this Cheryl, she said, please call me. I lost my sister that night. The pain is unbearable. She was 25 years old. And this is the kind of thing that is so important. So before I kind of just talk just a couple of minutes on the donations, I have Ron with me today. And, you know, Ron lost his bride of 20 days. And, Ron, I want you to tell your story because there's so many survivors out there and families of loved ones that this is so important to. But can you tell us, tell everyone how important this is to you?
Sure, Beverly. I would love to do that. Thank you, Captain Neil, for having us on. Appreciate it.
Yes.
Yeah, I started back, actually my aviation career started right after high school. I worked for Grumman Aircraft Corporation on Bethpage, Long Island. It was a great experience. Part of the project was the lunar module. I think 1969 is when they finally took off and landed on the moon, and I was part of that project. It was very exciting. then Uncle Sam called and worked in. My uncle was a colonel in the United States Air Force, and he was a B-52 pilot, as a matter of fact. And he got transferred to Washington, D.C., and had a desk job finally after retiring from flying. And I got a call from Uncle Sam to go into the military, to the Army. I says, no, I want to go in the Air Force. I want to get my aviation career. You know, that's what I wanted to do. And, well, you know, pull some strings, and I managed to wind up going into the Air Force. I was in SAC, Strategic Air Command. I was a crew chief with flying status on B-52, the D models, and KC-135 straddle tankers. Did a lot of in-flight refueling. And then moved back. I wanted to continue my aviation career. A lot of my friends from New York moved to Miami. They went to UM. And I said, you know, Miami, that's where Eastern is based. I want to work for Eastern Airlines. I love Eastern Airlines. So I moved to Miami, and that's where I continued my education in aviation and working at a part-time job, going to school at the same time. And that's where I met my beautiful wife, Lily. And after 2 years of dating, we got married. But aviation was always my first love as far as work goes. And Lily and I dated for about 2 years, and she's a beautiful woman, gorgeous. I mean, inside and out, beautiful person, beautiful personality, a God-loving woman, beautiful green eyes, brown hair, just gorgeous. And we dated for 2 years, and we got married. And we, a lot of family members couldn't make it down from New York, so we decided to continue our honeymoon, and we flew to New York to see a lot of family members that couldn't make it up for the wedding in Miami. And on the way back, of course, I remember my dad. I says, Dad, you know, I want to change the flight. I says, I want to move to a later flight because I'm going to spend more time with the family here. He says, Mom, whatever you want to do, son, that's fine. So I did. I changed it for the 9:30 or 9:40 flight p.m. out of Kennedy, and that's what we did. And I remember going there with my dad, took us to the airport. He came in with us. We sat down waiting for the plane, and the way it was, the Kennedy at that terminal, it was down below, actually, where I could see the nose of the aircraft that we were going to be boarding, and I saw the 310, you know, on the nose. That was the tail number, 310. And we finally boarded a plane, and it was gorgeous. It was a beautiful, beautiful L-1011. And our seats were way in the back, which I didn't care, really. We were in the middle aisle. And the captain gets on board, and he announces himself as Captain Loft. And I turned to Lily, and I said, Lily, I hope he stays aloft. Joking around. God knows what happened, you know, 2.5 hours later. So it was a beautiful flight. No events, and Beverly could tell you, you know, they didn't get a call back from the captain. They were having a gear problem. So I remember saying to Lily, I says, honey, there's a control tower. I says, we're making a go around. Because we're no more than maybe 200 feet off the runway, off the ground. And I says, don't worry about it. This happens a lot of times. Probably a lot of traffic in the area, you know. I remember seeing downtown Miami lights to my right. And I says, sure enough. I says, we're making a go around. We're going back out west over the Everglades. We didn't know what was going on up front. And, of course, everybody knows the story, what happened. So just before, prior to the crash, Lily says, I have to go to the restroom. I says, okay, honey, go ahead. And then she come back, she says, oh, no, honey, I'll just move over. So we changed seats, okay? I don't have nothing to do with it or not, but that's beside the point. But it's a series of events. So all of a sudden, you know, we hit and, you know, spending 4 or 5 hours in the swamp with no clothes on and severe injuries. They finally picked me up by helicopter and brought me to Hialeah Hospital. But, you know, it was being in the aviation, you know, it was a very traumatic experience. You know, flying combat missions and what have you, and nothing happens, you know, and you're coming back from your honeymoon in a brand new plane. So it's really changed my life quite a bit, enough that I have a contract now with Thomas Nielsen Publishing Company to write my memoirs, a story of my life, starting from the Grumman aircraft to the military, who started my own airline. I did start a commuter airline about 5 years after the accident. We were an interest-bay carrier. We had three aircraft that we leased. And unfortunately, the recession hit. And interest rates went up to sky high, 21%, 22%, and we just couldn't make it. So we had to dissolve the airline at the time. But it is my first love and always will be my love in my life is the aviation business, even though that's not what I'm in now. But I am in the process of writing a nonfiction book about my life and during the crash, my trials and triumphs. It's going to be called Descent into Darkness, a Plane Crash Survivor's Memoirs of Trials and Triumphs. And I promised Lily by her gravesite that this book that I'm going to write eventually is going to get published. I just know it is. And I think it could be made out of a movie as well. It's going to be dedicated to my beloved wife, Sarah Lily Infantino de la Rosa, in loving memory and a promise kept. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's on. Appreciate it.
Great story.
Appreciate it. Help out here as well.
And Ron, when that happens, we'd love to interview you for your book on the radio.
Thank you
show.
Very much. You know, if the 50 years, it's going to be 50 years, and there's not a day that goes by that it doesn't cross my mind, believe it or not. It's a very traumatic experience.
Yes.
Yeah, and Ron, that really is, you know, Captain Neil, I'll just take a couple more minutes. That is for all of us, 50 years, but for all of us who were impacted by that, by the crash, whether we are survivors or family members or loved ones that perished that night, it still is. I know I've carried these folks, you know, in my heart for 101 years, the 101 folks for 50 years, and as I know many have. So it's so important to so many of us who like the stories with Ron. It's just so hard. So I just want to say thank you so much, first of all, to all of you who have already donated. Oh, my gosh, we are so appreciative of your donations. But we just need to some help to get to that, the final goal. We have to raise the rest of the money for the installation and for that concrete slab it has to sit on. So if you haven't sent your check already or gone online, if you could please do so as soon as possible. And remember, there's no amount that's too small. I mean, whatever you can give, we all are so appreciative of that. And I know the information for donations is on the site. Don't forget, they are all donations are tax deductible. And Gail said, by the way, the executive director of National Air Disaster Foundation said she's working on getting out donation acknowledgement. She's going to be away for the next 2 weeks, starting Wednesday, but she is getting out acknowledgement. So thank you so much, Captain Neil. That's our update. When I come on, hopefully come back on, we will actually maybe have a little snippet at that point. To show you, but thank you so much to everybody who's donated, and please, please, please help us to get to our goal to raise just the rest of that money that we need to have. So
did
thanks,
I hear?
Stephanie.
Okay, Leanne, you had something that you wanted to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just said how much more money is needed to complete what you need to have done with Eastern and with the monument.
We are with the anticipation of the concrete slab, we have got to get at least to about, I would say, about another $2,500 until we have, until we are, you know, complete, so to speak, for that. That's for the installation plus the slab that has to go down on that.
I would like to suggest that before we leave the subject, I received a beautiful model, a Revell model of a Eastern Airlines DC-3, and many of you have seen that. It's the one that's in the Smithsonian hanging from the ceiling at Smithsonian. And Don Gagnon, Don and Dorothy Gagnon used to be on the show as host, and he sent me this suggesting that we give it to the person that that sends in the largest sum of money. However, that's impossible to track. And so I thought maybe we could auction it off in the next few shows.
Oh,
auction
great
it off
idea.
And put a put a time limit, but it is a beautiful model. I built one of these myself, and don't know, we've moved so many times over the years that I'm sure it crashed in some home's garage. And but it's a beautiful DC-3, and it's a large model. I think it'll bring a pretty good amount. It's unassembled. It's still in the kit with the plastic wrap. Never been opened. And Don, if you're listening, Don Gagnon, thank you very much for sending that to me, and with the suggestion that we use this in order to assist in raising funds for the memorial.
And if I may say, that's great, Neil, first of all, but Beverly, if you can send me even a picture or something, I can put it in the Falls magazine, because it'll be, you know, I'll obviously cover the unveiling in the spring magazine, but in the fall I can get something in there.
Great.
Okay,
great.
So
and I know
you got
Brenda,
my email, it's
Mercy,
in the book.
Yes, and you know what, Mercy is actually going to contact you. She might not have had a chance yet. She was going to contact you and get in touch with that, and see if she could put a little article with the picture and all in it. So I'll call
you
her
bet.
After the show, okay?
Sounds great. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, thank you.
Okay, very good. Well, that's thank you, Ron, and Beverly, for being with us today, and we hope that we can get you back often up until the dedication, which my wife and I hope that we're healthy enough to join you in the celebration of this long-awaited monument that would mean so much to the Eastern family.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you.
Okay, let's see. I got a couple of area codes here. I want to see if we've talked to you. Area code 908, that's Sharon. Sharon Moore, right,
yeah.
Sharon?
Yeah. That's me. I'm here.
Okay. How do you like it so far, Sharon? Is this your first time listening in?
No, the first time I listened in was the one about Braniff.
Okay.
Because my ex-father-in-law used to fly for Braniff. He was a character.
Okay. All right. And let's see, area code 239. Who might that be? Well, 239, just listening. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's David. David Maley from Fort Myers.
Hey, David. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm new to the channel, so I was just listening in and trying to catch up a little bit of all the old Eastern stuff, and this is nice. Nice program.
Good. Were you formerly with Eastern?
I was with Eastern from 1979 to 1991 in Gainesville, Florida, and also in Fort Myers, regional Southwest.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
I just turned 65, and I was trying to find out about benefits and things like that, if there's anything that's available for us as Eastern employees.
Yeah, I have called and asked Michael Zoll to be on our next show, and he's volunteered to do that. So we're going to have Michael next week, and he'll tell us about what's available to us. Probably not very much, but at any rate, past privileges are still out there, I think. So Michael will be with us and talking about that next show, among other topics that we'll be talking about. But sorry, we can't get it to you this time.
Okay, no problem. Is there also a directory of Eastern employees? I'd like to locate some of my old friends at Gainesville and Fort Myers. And I'm trying to, you know, it's kind of hard. It's been, you know, some time since I've been able to communicate with them.
Oh, well, I can put that out on the internet and see if on Facebook. I think you probably have already done that. And
right.
Hopefully you'll get some response for that. Sometimes
right,
it's slow in coming, but be patient.
Yes, it is.
And I guess that's about all we've got for our hour. We've gone over our hour just about a few minutes. So we're going to see if we can safely get the airplane down. We got some surprises here as we go off the air. I think we used to do this a few years back, right, Margaret, as far as landing the airplane and so forth?
Oh, yes, and we were good at it.
We were good. We were really good. Well, let's see if the crew are as good as we once were, all right? And so I'm going to see if I can find where I am and how we want to terminate this or end it. I think I'm going to turn it over to, well, maybe Luann's got something to say about it. Or no, Jim Holder's got something. Well, no. I got to go up here and turn it over to the captain of the flight, who is Captain Jim Harris. All right, Jim Harris, it's your time now.
Okay, here we are. Captain Holder, would you make the thanks for flying with us today? Announcement call F.A. Luann up to come up to the flight desk.
Sure, Captain Harris. Folks, we're approaching the airport from the east, and we'll be landing in about 10 minutes. It's been a pleasure again having you with us today, and the weather here in Atlanta is just perfect. Clear and 40 to 70 degrees. Excuse me. Oh, Luann, our young captain wants you to come up to the flight deck. Anyhow,
okay.
We will be passing just north of Stone Mountain today. If you're on the left-hand side, you can look out and see it. It's a very, very popular place to visit in Atlanta, but us pilots sort of take it for granted. Luann, are you heading up there?
Hey, I'm on my way. Hey, guys. Did you want to see me, Captain JP?
Oh, yes.
Yes, what?
Yes, Luann, we got a call from flight ops that a person by the name of Luther Perkins wants you to call him when you get in, when we get in. You know what it's all about, or is it personal?
Heck no, it's not personal. But that there guy thinks he can call me at work anytime, even when I'm on a trip. I swear, if it's not an emergency, he can just look for another dance card because his is about to be punched.
Flight 59, this is Atlanta Tower. You're clear to land runway 10. Wind is 080 degrees at 10 knots.
All right, flight 59, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer.
Luann,
there's a wheel hitting the runway.
I think Luann wants to. Yeah. To
wing and a prayer, coming in on a wing and a prayer. Though there's one motor gone, we can still carry on. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. What a show, what a fight. Yes, we really hit our target for tonight.
We did.
We sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's our field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord, we're coming in on a wing and a prayer. As we limp through the air, look below, there's our field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord, we're coming in.
It's Earl's time to sing. Folks,
yes.
See ya.
Silver wings.
Thank you.
Shining in the sunlight, roaring engines, headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away, leaving me lonely. Silver wings, slowly fading out of sight. Don't leave. but you locked me out of your mind and left me standing here behind. Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engines headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away and leaving me lonely. Silver wings.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you so much, host and guest. We appreciate you showing up, and it was a great show.
Thank you.
It was.
Thanks, Captain Neil.
It was a great show.
See you next week.
Thank you, man.
Silver wings shining in the sunlight, roaring engines headed somewhere in flight. They're taking you away, leaving me lonely. Silver wings slowly fading out of sight, slowly fading out of sight.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.